From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Cancel, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. We've got a great show for you today. We do have a great show for you today. Writer-director Judd Apatow will be joining us later to play Not My Job, so that's exciting. But first, a little bit of a beef. Ever since we first went on the air 11 years ago, we have been trying to get Bill Clinton to come pay us a visit, be on the show. He's never come on. Clearly, we've gone about it the wrong way. So, this is what we did. We've taken some hostages. Not to worry. They actually won the right to be our hostages by making a dollar a day pledge to their local station. We're treating them well right now. They're hanging out in Carl's trailer listening to his highlight reels. Nonetheless, we will not consider releasing them until Bill Clinton comes and asks nicely. We will also accept Robert Pattinson because he's dreamy. So while we wait for that call, we'll take yours. Give us a call, the number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Don Carey.
Where are you calling from, Don?
Norwich, Vermont.
Norwich, Vermont. Oh. Famed home of the Norwich Military Academy?
Many hundreds of years ago. It's since moved, but we still have old buildings.
Really? How do you move a military academy?
Secretly at night.
Wow. They just get the cadets outside, stand around the building on four, pick it up, and you... Dawn, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a humorist and the author of the complete audio program, The Free Fall of Webster Cummings, Mr. Tom Beaudet.
Hello, Dawn.
Hello.
Next, say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column is Roxanne Roberts.
Hey, Dawn.
Hello.
And lastly, a comedian whose CD, I Heart Jokes, is out now. She's also performing at the Marion Cultural and Civic Center in Marion, Illinois, on September 3rd. Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Dawn.
Hello.
So, Dawn, welcome to our show. We're going to do something crazy this week, something nutty. We're going to start with Who's Carl this time. Carl Cancel will recreate three quotations from the week's news. Your job, of course, explain or identify two of them out of three. Do that. You'll win our prize. Ready to go?
Absolutely.
Here we go. Listen to this headline from the always classy New York Post on Wednesday.
Bill can still get the women.
So where did Bill Clinton, the big dog, go to pick up some women this time?
That would be North Korea.
Exactly right. Very good. Like the Terminator, notorious ladies' man Bill Clinton has been reprogrammed to use his powers for good. The Wackaloons, who run North Korea, let it be known that the only way they would release two young female journalists would be if Bill Clinton himself came and asked nicely. Foreign policy experts already knew that Kim Jong-il was desperate to attract Bill Clinton's attention. In recent official photos, he was seen to be wearing a beret.
That's below the belt.
Seriously, people were wondering, why do they want Bill Clinton? Well, the real reason was, and we have this on good authority, was that Bill had told Hillary, oh, look, I'm going to be in North Korea this weekend for a secret mission, and then realized far too late that she is now in a position to check that. So.
Do you feel like maybe he's going around the house going, ner, 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 ner.
He's saying this, honey, I'm sure there'll be another hostage crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Less volatile situation that you can resolve as Secretary of State.
Oh, yeah.
I just had to get this one because this was a tough one. But you'll get the next one, really. All right, Don, here is your next quote.
We knew people would respond, but boy, did they really respond.
That was a White House economist. He was surprised how many people drove in to take advantage of what program?
Would this be the Cash for Clunkers?
Cash for Clunkers, yes. The program, heavily promoted by auto dealers, it sucked up the $1 billion put aside for it in a matter of days. Turns out all you need to finally motivate people to get rid of their old gas-guzzling 78 Lincoln Town Cars is you give them $4,500 cash. That'll do it. Who knew? This led to, of course, criticism of the Obama administration, because what kind of incompetent fools create a government program that people like too much? Our American tradition, of course, is government programs that people hate, like LBJ's famous Cash for Kidneys program.
You know, I thought we always did have a Cash for Clunkers program. They were called teenagers and college kids.
You could sell them, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, my first car, I think I paid $100 for, which even in 1974 was not a lot of money. And it was a 1955 Pontiac Star Chief. It was huge. It wasn't a very good car, but it was a huge car.
And that's what was important.
Yeah, four people could comfortably pass out in this car. And what I learned from that car was a lot about myself, which has served me well, not to mention mechanics. And where are the young people today going to learn these important life lessons if the government's buying up all the clunkers? For example, how are you going to learn the value of having matching tires if you don't drive your clunker once in your life?
It's true.
How to put out a car fire.
Now, what's interesting...
Right. How to push a car.
Exactly.
That's the other thing. Yeah. A lot of kids don't know how to push.
What's interesting, though, is the Obama administration has found out that, you know, there are other programs people are wondering what the effect will be, but if you give cash directly to the people, they really respond positively. So they have a new initiative to combat obesity. It's called Cash for Chunkers. You trade in fat people for $4,500, you know. Hey, Uncle Stu, put down the Hot Pocket. Let's go for a drive. All right. Here, Don, is your last quote, and I'm so proud to say it was seen on Twitter.
With sadness in my heart, I've decided not to return to Idol. I'll miss nurturing all the new talent, but most of all being a part of a show that I helped from day one become an international phenomenon.
That was somebody known for being a little unpredictable, tweeting her latest sudden move. Who was it?
Paula Abdul?
Yes. This is the woman, Paula Abdul, who this week was called by a competing network head, quote, an exceptional piece of talent, unquote. She's announced she's leaving American Idol. It's a pity. She's always lent a certain random, possibly crazy, or just mad with lust air to the otherwise stead talent competition. She announced via Twitter, of course, that she's going to head to greener pastures to search for much younger men. Sorry, is it too soon? But the question is...
What, is there a period of mourning?
I guess so. But the real question that all American Idol fans are asking is, who are you going to replace her? Who's going to bring that same kind of faded 80s pop star glamour plus completely addled ditziness?
Hell, I'll go.
You know, you can do it? I was thinking you get Cyndi Lauper and just give her two fistfuls of Percocet, and that's pretty much a working substitute. Carl, how did Dawn do in our quiz?
Dawn did very well, Peter. Three correct answers. Dawn, you win our prize.
Well done.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Roxanne.
Yes, sir.
A hero bestrides our earth. Seriously, we have reported in the past, on his black belt in judo, his best-selling beefcake calendar, his amazing life-saving shot with a tranquilizer gun to bring down and save an endangered tiger. Now he has dived to the bottom of the deepest lake in the world. Who is it?
You know, I never thought I'd say I'd had the hots for a Russian president. Well, he's not president. He's prime minister now.
Prime minister.
Yeah, Putin.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't have the hots for Brezhnev with those eyebrows? He was cute.
I did.
Putin, Vladimir Putin, yes.
Yes.
You know those...
Did you see how...
What?
Okay. For those of you that has missed this, there's a picture of him on horseback, bare-chested. I kind of was like, whoa.
Really?
I had no idea that he was quite that, you know?
Well, I wonder if...
Plus, authoritarianism is hot, don't you think?
You know, there's these rumors that Sarah and Todd Palin are having trouble. I wonder if he's like, if she can see him, you know? I wonder if he's like preening a little bit for
Ryan. Right. Putin dove almost a mile to the bottom of Siberia's Lake Baikal, deepest in the world. Now, true Putin fans like us were disappointed to find out that he used a submersible to do it. We thought he would either just hold his breath or perhaps just suck up the entire lake with his powerful lungs and stroll across the dry bottom.
You know, in 1 week, we've got, you know, Putin riding horseback barefoot and diving in the deepest lake in the world. Yet former President Clinton comes home with like a knife in his teeth and a journalist on each arm.
Right.
And President Obama is in Elkhart, Indiana, standing in front of the failed RV industry. Like, one of these three guys needs an agent.
Right now, time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Don Hammack from Biloxi, Mississippi.
Biloxi. Heard of Biloxi. What do you do down there?
I work at the Sun-Herald newspaper down here.
Oh, my gosh. How are things at the Sun-Herald?
Well, we're getting a paper out every day.
There you go.
That's what we do.
There you go. Is it sometimes the same paper, just left over from the day before?
No. Well, maybe sometimes on a weekend.
Well, welcome to the show, Don. Now, you're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Don's topic?
Don't worry, bro. I've been there.
Ever feel like you were alone in the world with no one to understand your unique burdens? Of course you do. You're all public radio listeners. Anyway, this week we heard a heartwarming story of somebody with that problem getting sympathy and moral support from an unexpected place. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about an unexpected helping hand. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. First, let's hear from Paula Poundstone.
On the first day of this year's Great Food Festival in Ann Arbor, Michigan, running August 4th through 11th at the Sonchagrin Convention Center adjacent to the fairgrounds, the Henkel Knife and Cutlery Company sponsored a support group for kitchen accident victims. A group whose numbers have swelled since television's recent love affair with cooking shows. When group leader Chef Henry Taslimi asked who was there from out of town, the show of hands was almost gory. There were new volunteers to begin the sharing among the participants, nervously seated in a loose circle of folding chairs, so Chef Taslimi, a large man with a bit of bad complexion, opened the discussion by explaining why he will never put a cheese grater so close to his face again. Soon, tearful tales of slippery floors and hot soup, flambé mistakes, and misplaced skewers spilled forth. We want people to get back into the kitchen, get back to creating and joy, not be belittled by fears, says co-organizer Gordon McKee, who's missing the top third of his pinky on his right hand and claims to recently have begun drinking blended drinks again. After an hour of sharing and empowerment, Dean Henkel himself went chair to chair, serving deli sandwiches and vichyssoise that he made himself, not even trying to hide his hook. There were no finger foods provided, and nothing was served on a stick.
A support group for kitchen accident victims. Your next story of unlikely encouragement comes from Tom Baudet.
Fed-up residents of an Austrian village whose name in English is the gerund form of an obscenity beginning with F and used to depict what happens when two people really, really love each other and cannot be broadcast, are being offered a helping hand by their German neighbors in a town with a name that starts with W, ends with K, and is a common British vulgarism describing the act of pleasuring oneself. The locals of When Two People Really Love Each Other are sick of English-speaking tourists taking lewd pictures of themselves in front of town signage. Tourism officials in Pleasuring Oneself are urging residents of When Two People Really Love Each Other to follow their lead and cash in on their name. Jürgen Stoll, who runs the Pleasuring Oneself guest house, and reports he can hardly fit everyone in. Summer visitors hike up Pleasuring Oneself Mountain and purchase a large array of Pleasuring Oneself souvenirs and postcards. When two people really love each other, Mayor Franz Mindel is having none of it. We don't find it funny and just want to live in peace. And possibly wishes the dirty-minded tourists would just go when two people really love each other themselves.
The residents of one town with a dirty name in English try to reach out to the residents of another similarly afflicted town. Your last story of an unlikely expression of solidarity comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Not all married governors have soulless, sleazy encounters with $1,000 an hour escorts. Some, like, say, South Carolina loverboy Mark Sanford, follow their heart, which is why WOW, short for Wonderful Other Women, took out a full-page letter in state papers last week supporting the beleaguered politician. The group of self-proclaimed mistresses praised the governor's deep feelings for his Argentine lover and named him their first Trailblazer Award recipient. Quote, "At the end of the day, Mark Sanford is just a man in love," wrote WOW President Rito Dubnow. "We commend him for showing the human side of extramarital affairs and his respect for his other woman." Attempts to interview the WOWs were unsuccessful. Not one of them, it seems, signed their real names to the public letter.
All right. A group of people somewhere in the world got together to express support for each other. Was it, from Paula Poundstone, kitchen accident victims at a state fair? From Tom Baudet, the residents of two towns, each with names that are fine in German but quite dirty in English? Or from Roxanne Roberts, a group of proud but anonymous mistresses? Which of these is the real story of an expression of comfort and togetherness in the news?
Well, I think if Mark Sanford had visited one town instead of the other, he'd be in less trouble.
Nicely done.
That's well played, sir. Well played.
I know. Just give him the point.
That was something. Go on, but you got to choose.
I'm going to go with the two towns.
The two towns. Tom's story of the two towns, each with their dirty names. All right, well, we spoke to somebody who knew about this gesture.
The town has been existing under this name for more than 800 years, so the residents voted against changing the village's name.
That was Wolfgang Renezeder, spokesman for the Austrian Embassy in Washington, D.C. Congratulations, Don. You got it right. You earned a point for Tom Baudet. And
you
won our prize. Carl Castle will look forward to the greeting on your home answering machine. Thank you so much for playing with us today.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And now the game where we challenge people who have accomplished important things to accomplish something utterly meaningless. Writer-director Judd Apatow may be the Preston Sturges of stoner comedies. In his own movies like The 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up, and his latest hit Funny People, plus many more films he's produced, he depicts men as ignorant but well-meaning little boys, women as civilizing, if sometimes shrill, objects of desire, and marijuana as a damned fine plant. Judd Apatow joins us now. Welcome to Wait, Wait.
It's great to be here.
Judd, I just gave a probably unfair summary of your movies. I wanted to give you a chance. Is there a simple way of describing a Judd Apatow movie?
I think you captured it perfectly.
Thank you. I've heard the term bromance applied to your movies, insofar as many of them are about strong emotional, if not quite sexual, attachments between men. Do you buy into that?
I think that's what's happening on your stage right now.
Well, I'm not talking about us, Judd. I'm talking about you.
I think, man love is always a very interesting thing.
Yes.
I can't seem to get enough of it. I don't know why, much to the concern of my wife.
Yeah, I bet. Well, speaking of which, there's a lot of things I want to talk to you about. But not only do you cast your wife in your movies, the fabulous actress Leslie Mann, you also cast your children. You put your whole family in your movies. Is this not odd?
It is odd. You know, the thing is, they make a fair amount of money because there are guild minimums. And then I have to put all this money in the bank.
This is your children.
Because there are laws about this.
You're talking about your children.
My children. And then when they are 18, they're supposed to get the cash. And now, the other day, my daughter, who's 11, said, "How much money is in that bank account, Daddy?" So I'm nervous that she's going to get that money when she's 18 and have, like, $70,000 worth of beer money for college.
Has their stardom gone to their head? Or they start like demanding better trailers and stuff? And have they started to throw diva fits on set?
They truly don't know anything about it because I don't let them see the movies because they're R-rated. I am editing a version of the movie for my daughter Maud where I cut out everything inappropriate, and I think it's going to be 12 minutes long.
Judd, let's talk about you for a second, though. I understand that you started as a stand-up comic, but I've also heard you say that you weren't very good.
I think we let Paula be the judge of that.
Yeah, because you actually opened for Paula. Paula, do you remember seeing Judd's act?
Yes.
All right.
That's how memorable it was.
And understanding, I'm going to guess that you really can't hurt Judd's feelings. Can you tell us about it?
Well, there was a sense in what he was doing that 10, 20 years down the road, he was going to be a very successful director.
I am one of 1,100 faceless Jewish boys who have opened up for Paula on the road.
No. You could tell from the very start that there would be a time that his children would be able to work in his films. You knew it. His kids have a bank account, for heaven's sakes. It's funny that you say you worry that, you know, they're going to have this money. At least they have their own money. My kids keep asking me if I feel well.
Your movies seem to be about, to whatever degree, losers. We think of the 40-year-old virgin who is a 40-year-old virgin, and we think of the roommates at the beginning of Knocked Up, and we think even of the Seth Rogen character. These are guys who are not doing well. Is that how you've written about these guys so much? Is that how you see yourself as the loser, the socially maladroit guy who can't get it going?
That is way too heavy for this format right now.
Sorry, man. I thought
you're asking me to go into a very personable place.
I am.
Are you tearing up right now? Be honest.
I am, but I'm completely naked in my hotel. That's really the part about it.
Tell us, before we go to the game, I'm still curious about your early comedy. What was it like? How would you describe Judd Apatow comedian?
I was basically an observational comedian. I wasn't unique. I had no distinct personality, and I was very young, and so I had no life experience. I made the great soup that was my terrible act. There was a lot of discussion of why girls wouldn't have sex with me and my back hair.
You were making back hair jokes.
I used to talk about how I had so much hair on my back, I could see it in my shadow. That was as good as it got.
Was there a moment where you're on stage and you're like, this is not working, you got to think of something else to do with my life?
I used to open up for Jim Carrey on the road, and I used to see how Adam Sandler was doing 20 years ago, and they were very charismatic people. And I would work with people like Paula, who are brilliant, and I'm not just kissing up to the room, and you would feel like, I am not on the same level as these people. I do need to find another way to be involved in comedy because I'm never going to be as unique and interesting as them on stage, as I'm proving with my performance on your show perfectly.
I have to say, I find you endearingly self-conscious. It's just as I would expect you to be if you were played by Seth Rogen. Although not as stoned. Well, Judd Apatow, we are so delighted to have you with us. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
But that's just what they want you to believe.
You've heard about the birthers. Those are the people who believe that Obama was not born in America. But they are not the only and not even the craziest conspiracy theorists out there. So we are going to ask you three questions about other conspiracy theories. Get two out of three right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners.
All right.
Carl, who is writer-director Judd Apatow playing for?
Peter, Judd is playing for Rachel Sawatsky in Taiwan.
Wow. Taiwan, no less.
I was hoping it was going to be Taiwan.
There you are. You got it. We're going to start with a simple question. A British conspiracy theorist named David Icke has been arguing for years that what? Is it A, high fructose corn syrup is a psychoactive drug leading to CIA mind control? B, on January 1st, 2010, our cell phones will wake up and kill us all? Or C, George W. Bush, Queen Elizabeth, and Chris Christopherson, among others, are secretly alien reptiles with a thirst for human blood?
Wow, those are all super, super crazy.
Yes.
It's hard to even pick one that even a crazy person would think was rational. I'm going B. I'm going with the cell phones.
Cell phones are going to wake us up. January 1st, 2010, all of a sudden, the ringtone will be the apocalypse. No, actually, it was C, the reptiles. Mr. Icke is a former professional soccer player. He realized that the alien reptiles were ruling our world and or writing songs for Janis Joplin some 20 years ago. He's been trying to warn us all since. This is not a problem. Well, it's a problem because there are alien reptiles running the world. But it's not a problem for you because you have two more chances. Here we go. Next question. Some people believe that an evil conspiracy of wealth and power called the Phoebus Cartel has been laboring for decades. For what nefarious end? A, to prevent the invention of long-lasting light bulbs. B, they're hiding the evidence that aliens did in fact invent the microwave. Or C, they're preventing us from finding out the wonders of hemp. Phoebus Cartel.
The Phoebus Cartel.
Phoebus, the name is a clue, if that helps.
I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A, the light bulbs. You're correct. Well done. They were. The Phoebus collection was a real conglomerate of light bulb manufacturers back in the 20s, and some believe they still operate in the shadows, making sure that we still have to change our bulbs and feed their coffers. All right, this is very exciting, because you get this last one right, you win it all. Some say various groups of powerful or occult people rule our society. That's no secret. We know that's true. The question is, where are they headquartered? Some people have figured it out. They believe that the world-controlling conspiracy is headquartered at A vast undersea base off Atlantic City, New Jersey. B, underneath Denver International Airport. Or C, the Sleeping Beauty's castles in various Disneylands around the world.
I'm going B.
You're
going
to go with B, Denver International Airport. You say that with some confidence, which makes me worry, because you're right. That is the secret headquarters of the cabal that controls our world, according to many people, especially callers into Art Bell's radio show. Their logic, it's got lots of underground tunnels, and if you see the runways from the air, this is true, you know this if you've flown there, it's a swastika out there on the plains of Colorado. Well done. Carl, how did Judd Apatow do in our show?
Well enough, Peter. Judd had two correct answers, so he wins for Rachel Sawatsky.
Well done,
Judd.
Well done. Judd Apatow is a writer-director. His latest movie, the number one movie in the country last weekend, is Funny People. Judd Apatow, so thrilled to talk to you. Thanks for the great movies. Thanks for being here.
All right, thank you.
Take care. In just a minute, Carl reads passages from his favorite book, Catcher in the Rhyme. It's our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call. 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Paula, there's a growing sense of doubt about the claims the Obama administration is making about its performance and the statistics they've offered to back up those claims. Well, things were not helped this week when critics cast doubt on an announcement about the president's what?
His weight.
No, not his weight. I'll give you a hint. They also, just to make it more suspicious, that they claimed that the money he paid to rent the shoes was part of the stimulus.
Rent shoes? Bowling. Yes. His bowling.
His bowling
isn't
score.
As good as he says it is?
Well, this is what happened. You remember that back in the campaign, he famously went bowling, I think it was in Pennsylvania, and he scored a 37, which caused much mocking and dismay. Well, on Monday, White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs told reporters he had seen with his own eyes Barack Gutterball Obama bowl 144 at the Camp David Bowling Alley over the weekend. So Gibbs announced his bowling score, and he got some skeptical questioning, and he said, "Now look, look," said Gibbs, "this shouldn't be so hard to believe. Bowling is a huge pastime in his native country of Kenya." "Oh, no!"
I mean, doesn't the guy have two bowling alleys now? I mean, there's one in the White House.
There's
right?
one in the White House, yeah.
Yeah, and there's one in Canada. So, I mean, of course he's going to get. And 144 still kind of sucks.
Look, if he. Yeah. Well, first of all.
Okay. Oh, wait. I am lucky to break 100, okay? But there's been no discussion here about bumpers. You notice that?
You think? Yeah. Wait a minute. Yeah. You think the president is using those kiddie bumpers?
Well, they didn't
the
say.
The birthday party bumpers?
I kind of like the image of it, though, don't you?
I was about to say, I mean, if the president really has brought up his bowling score from 37 to 144, he's probably not making the most optimum use of his time while in the White House.
Yeah, exactly. No, I like a president who doesn't score big in bowling. I didn't even like it when the first Bush, everybody made fun of him. Remember when he didn't know about the scanner with the milk?
Yeah.
See, I thought that was good news.
That he didn't know about shopping for groceries.
Yeah.
Why?
Because I don't want my president shopping for groceries and picking up his dry cleaning. We got bigger fish to fry here, and they need to get out and do it.
Anyway, Tom, Starbucks is training its managers and baristas to work faster. And one exercise they're using to train them is they're asking the baristas to perform a challenging task that's a bit of a throwback to childhood. What is it?
A throwback to childhood. Play jacks.
No.
That's tough. Have you tried that lately?
That's hard.
Really hard.
This is something some of us did as kids, depending on our age, and it teaches them assembly, disassembly, manual dexterity.
Playing with Legos?
No, I'll give you a hint.
It
might lead to somebody giving you one day a holiday potato chino.
Oh, Mr. Potato Head?
Making Mr. Potato Heads.
Seriously?
Assembling them and disassembling them, yes, for hours. Ever notice how in Starbucks you're double half-calf non-fat?
Why wouldn't they just practice, like, making coffee?
Because if they were good at making coffee, they wouldn't have to practice with a Mr. Potato Head. That's the point. Will you ever notice how your double half-calf non-fat vanilla latte takes so long it's almost not worth overpaying for it? Starbucks has noticed, as part of their new speediness training program, baristas are seeing how fast they can assemble a Mr. Potato Head toy. The goal is 45 seconds or less. Seems strange, but there's good news. You can now get a vanilla latte with googly eyes. A little faux mustache.
And a hat.
Yes. Paula, this is such good news for accident victims in Iowa. They now have an alternative to calling 911. What?
To calling 911, they can write them.
Yes, they can. But in what method?
They can text them.
They can text them, right. You can text your emergency. You know, you're sitting there, and then all of a sudden it's like, OMG, shot in face, LOL. I'm sure you follow this news. It turns out federal studies have shown driving while texting extremely dangerous. Well, good news, if you're texting while driving in Iowa and you crash, you can just crawl over to your detached arm, pull the phone from your now dead hand, and text 911 with your other hand. Text language, we know, is all about abbreviations. The Iowa Emergency Rescue Team has come up with some shorthand for common emergency needs. FMCP, that's fat man experiencing chest pain. There's OMG, usually means oh my God. It's got a 911 meeting, so OMG, OMG would be oh my God, office mate mauled by gorilla.
And for second timers, you always just end it with A.
Yeah.
Again. Office mate attacked by gorilla. Again.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago. And you can find out about upcoming shows in Santa Barbara and Pasadena, California. Also, tickets for our October show at Carnegie Hall in New York City. Go on sale September 2nd. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Matt Taylor from Lafayette, Louisiana.
Hey, beautiful Lafayette. That's right down there in Cajun country, right?
Oh, may we?
Oh, that's excellent. Oh, wow. You're bilingual.
Oh, not even close.
Not even close, really? So are you?
No, the Cajuns turned me on that real quick. I studied French for 4 years and tried to speak French with them and suddenly realized that, no, I'm not even in the same realm.
Right, I understand. So you just don't try. But it's sort of beautiful and exotic and the food's excellent, right?
It is another country.
That's great to hear. Well, welcome to our show, Matt. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each of them. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Ready to go?
Oh, yeah.
Here's your first limerick.
As the movie's plot gets rather naughty, I stand up and my neighbors act snotty. But the movie will slow. My website says so. It tells me when I should go
potty.
Yes, indeed. This is a common problem. You're in a movie, and let's say you're watching Star Wars movies, right? But you really need to make a dash for the bathroom. When to go? Time it right, and you've missed 10 minutes of boring sand dunes. Time it wrong, and you're coming back going, wait, who's Luke's father? What? Now, thankfully, there's runpee.com. It's a website, and it's an iPhone app. It tells you when it's safe to leave without missing any good stuff. For example, you're watching the recent Transformers movie, for example. Runpee recommends taking a break 30 minutes in, right after the hangar scene, and then it tells you to come back in about 2 hours for the credits. Here is your next limerick.
Easy listening is not just for wimps or for dancers who may have slight limps. It turns out that monkeys don't like sounds too funky, and soft rock is favored by
chimps.
Right. Want to make your chimpanzee friends happy? Pipe in a little Barry Manilow into their enclosure. According to a study from Kyushu University in Japan, infant chimpanzees who have never heard music before have a distinct preference for the easy listening music found in elevators and malls. The chimps were played a variety of music. They could make requests by pulling in a cord. Turns out the chimps are really into Air Supply and the Carpenters. This is interesting. It's not really a surprise to anyone who's ever listened to their local light FM station. People are always calling in to dedicate Close to You to Bubbles in the African enclosure. All right. Here is your last limerick.
Those who've heard the word rarely rejoiced. It's the mouthfeel of how the sound's voiced. Plus, it's soggy and drenching. Look, my fists are clenching. I'm repulsed by that icky word.
Oh, choice.
Not choice. It's a tough one because we're asking for a specific word, but there are some clues. Let's hear it again. There's some clues in it.
Those who've heard the word rarely rejoiced. It's the mouthfeel of how the sound's voiced. Plus, it's soggy and drenching. Look, my fists are clenching. I'm repulsed by that icky word.
Soggy. Soggy is a clue. It's a synonym for soggy. Rhymes with
moist.
Moist. Yes, very good. The word moist is the most hated, unpopular word in English. At least that's according to Mark Peters of Good Magazine. There are Facebook groups like, I hate the word moist, and moist is a wrong word. And Twitter is alive with tweets from people venting their rage toward the word moist. Visual Thesaurus editor Ben Zimmer has speculated that it's the oi sound in moist that offends people, since other much hated words include ointment and goiter. And that would also goiter. That would also explain the strange widespread dislike for old Jewish people who are getting up from chairs. Oi. Oi. Carl, how did Matt do in our quiz?
Matt was perfect. 3 correct answers. So Matt, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Tom Baudet and Paula Poundstone each has 3 correct answers. Roxanne Roberts has 2.
All right, then. Roxanne, you are indubitably in third place, so we'll begin with you. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill-in-the-blank. On Wednesday, Blank was sworn in for a second term as president of Iran.
Ahmadinejad.
Right, Mahmoud. A government report showed that the number of workers filing for blank benefits dropped more sharply than expected.
Unemployment.
Right, this week it was announced that hundreds of branches of the blank may be shut down.
Post office.
Right, in honor of their shared birthday, blank brought cupcakes to Helen Thomas in the press room.
President Obama.
Right. A six-month-old baby was kicked out of a Burger King in St. Louis for violating the restaurant's blank policy.
No shoes.
Right, exactly. An attack by hackers shut down the popular networking site blank on Thursday.
Twitter!
Right. The British village of Leadenham lost power temporarily after a blank hit the power cables.
Drunk guy in one of those lawn chairs with balloons all over it.
So close. It involved balloons, but the balloons were attached to a thong.
Oh, that way. Somebody was wearing the thong?
No.
Oh,
somebody attached black thong underpants
that is a
helium balloon. But the helium balloon carrying the thong got caught in power cables. The thong short-circuited the entire town. No one claimed the wayward underwear, but a spokesman for a local polo club said, quote, "It may never be proven exactly where this came from, but it could have been our party. We think it may have been a joke," unquote. Carl, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Well, Roxanne had 6 correct answers, Peter, for 12 more points. She now has 14 points and has the lead.
Well done, Roxanne. We flipped a coin. Paula has elected to go third. Fill in the blank. 3 American hikers were charged with illegal entry after they accidentally crossed the border into blank.
Iran.
Right. According to a Quinnipiac University poll, the approval rating for blank dropped to 50%.
Barack Obama.
Right. According to reports this week, 2 Russian nuclear-powered blanks were spotted off the east coast of the United States.
Submarines.
Right. Tens of thousands of people gathered at Manila Cathedral to pay their respects to former Philippine President blank.
Corazon Aquino.
Right. While in Africa, Hillary Clinton said that she would faithfully bring a message to her daughter from an African man who offered blank.
Marriage.
Yes, 40 goats and 20 cows for her hand in marriage. Best known for teen comedies like Ferris Bueller's Day Off and The Breakfast Club, blank died this week at age 59.
Son of a gun. Blank.
John Hughes. After falling from the stage during a performance in South Dakota, Aerosmith lead singer blank was taken to the hospital with head and neck injuries.
Steve Tyler.
A Pilates and yoga instructor in Kamloops City, British Columbia, has been warned twice by a local recreational complex about his blank.
His body odor.
No, his 2 short shorts.
Oh, gosh.
48-year-old Maud Abdullah bought the 6 to 8 pairs of booty shorts at a Montreal Walmart in 1997. He's not about to just toss them out. They're perfectly good. Officials at the Tournament Capital Center say that Abdullah's shorts are too revealing, but Abdullah says he's gotten moral support from his wife and his colleagues. Quote, "I'm not going to change my style, not when I'm half a century old. I'm just going to keep wearing what I wear." Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, and Tom has taken the lead.
Well done. All right, then. How many does Paula need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right, Paula. Here we go. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. On Thursday afternoon, the Senate confirmed blank's nomination to the Supreme Court.
Sonia Sotomayor.
Right. Well, right. Yes, very good. Caught with $90,000 in his freezer, former Congressman blank was convicted on corruption charges.
I can't remember.
William Jefferson.
Yeah.
Dozens of passengers were injured on Monday because of blank during their continental flight.
Turbulence.
Right. Janet Napolitano warned that the blank will most likely flare up again in the fall.
The blank will fall up. Foliage.
Swine flu. Swine flu. A New Zealand journalist is organizing an expedition to the Gobi Desert in the hopes of tracking down the elusive blank.
Bigfoot.
Acid-spitting Mongolian death worm. After 34 years in prison for attempting to shoot President Gerald Ford, blank is scheduled to be released next week.
Squeaky Fromm.
Right. The 1996, 97, 98, and 99 model Ford Explorers were the top 4 cars traded in as part of the blank program.
The clunker.
Right, cash for clunkers. Tensions escalated between India and Scotland this week over blank.
That man's short shorts.
No, over who can claim to have invented chicken tikka masala.
Oh!
Scottish MPs claim the dish was invented in a Glasgow restaurant in the 1970s. They're seeking official recognition from the EU. Indian chefs say the dish has been served in Delhi for generations, and Scottish claims are preposterous. The Scottish MPs are pushing ahead with their claim, though, saying even if they lose the tikka masala battle, they're sure to get recognition for that other important innovation of Scottish native cuisine, sushi. Carl, did Paula do well enough to win?
Well, she needed at least six to tie, Peter, but Paula had just four correct answers.
Oh.
So with 15 points, Tom Baudet is
well
this
done.
Great champion. Job.
It was the acid-spitting worms that got you, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, and it's funny, because I was booked to go on that trip to hunt for the acid-spitting worms. So I should have remembered it.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists how Bill Clinton will save the day next. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations. LendingTree, where you can choose from up to four customized loan offers, 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win, LendingTree.com. The Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day at wallacefoundation.org. And CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Bethany Williams. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Lester Larchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. BJ Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction every week from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what is Bill Clinton's next mission? Tom Baudet.
Cradling Paula Abdul in his big arms, he will stride across the stage of American Idol, kick Simon Cowell out of his chair, and place her gently in her rightful place.
Roxanne Roberts.
1 week, no TV, cell phone, internet, fast food, or other women, alone with his wife.
Whoa, Paula Poundstone.
My hero, Bill Clinton, will jetpack into the epicenter of a circle of salivating, vicious, angry, riled animals, grab a terrified congressman, and shoot back to the safety of the sky, leaving the Republican hoods at the town hall meeting on health care far, far behind.
Well, if the big dog does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Tom Baudet, and Roxanne Roberts. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.